Have you ever been in the position of finding someone attractive and as you start imagining your future together, you start planning your life together, within 17 seconds into this sequence of thoughts, you realize, oh, hang on a minute, that person is the same sex as me. It really does give you pause for thought, and I would like to share with you today two times in my life when that has happened. One was about 18 months ago, and much to my lasting regret, the other was yesterday, and I will share both of those incidents with you So, yesterday, oh, hang on a minute, before I start banging on about yesterday, how are you? You honestly, I've just like spent 50 minutes on the phone to my mate Johnny and his wife SJ, and SJ is just submitted her first ever book submission. She's written her first ever novel. She's I don't know. I don't even know if this should be out in the public domain, but let's just say my mate wants to be an author. I wholeheartedly believe she has everything in her to become an author. Let's just ignore the fact she's from Liverpool. And yeah, she's just submitted her book to someone. So I've just been speaking to her and Johnny for an hour, asking me how to spell stuff, believe it or not. You know, my mates only come to me when they want stuff, and usually all I'm good for isn't sympathy, isn't empathy, it's just grammar. That's what I have going for me, friends. Grammar. I can spell stuff. Jesus. I don't know how to feel. You'd actually expect me to feel a little bit gutted about that, but I'm quite proud of being able to spell. I think it's an underutilized skill, especially nowadays. I'm horrified. Sorry, I didn't plan to go down this route, but I'm horrified by the general command of the general command of English nowadays is just utter. It just disgusts me. I don't know. It's worrying. Anyway, I didn't mean to talk about that. My mate rung me to ask me how to spell stuff because she wants to make sure that she's not sending shit that she that's gonna make him think you're not for us, love. Anyway, not important. How are you? It's now, as I record this, 10 minutes past 10 on an evening of Sunday, the 7th of June. I always plan to release this, or at least to record this podcast earlier every Sunday, but I think I've slipped into that habit now whereby my brain is like, I know you want to record this at 6 o'clock CK, but unfortunately, you've now developed a habit of the last 19 episodes recording at 10 p.m. So if you don't mind, fuck what you want. This is what I want. And that's what my subconscious is saying to me. I don't know if you're really into the subconscious and all of that, but I'm massively into it. And in fact, I've started consuming a book on Audible called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy, and I'm a massive fan. I can't lie. I wonder if I can play some of it to you now through this phone. I'm going to try and play it probably won't work, but it might. Let's see if it can play this to you and you can. No internet. Never mind. Right. Never mind. Just if you're into Audible and you're into how the mind works, I highly recommend it. I'm only on, to be fair, chapter one, but I'm really excited to get stuck back into this because so far it's bringing me joy. And a lot of what this is saying is congruent with what I've been learning myself over the last year or so. The Power of the Subconscious Mind. Beautiful. Makes me very happy. Get It by Joseph Murphy. Anyway, so in this episode today, we are also going to explore, if you're a fan of Friends, did you like Friends? Sitcom Friends. If you did, stick about because I'm going to share with you something I discovered online yesterday, which is just glorious. Behind the scenes of a taping of an episode of Friends, and it's just glorious. If you're into the mechanics of how just entertainment works, it'll be interesting on that level. If you're into Friends because you just think it's one of the greatest comedies ever made, you'll love it for that reason. So I'm going to share some bits with you from that in a bit. And I will also, to be honest with you, I'm not going to lie, the last 48 hours has basically just been me wasting my life, just discovering stuff online and enjoying it. And I'm just going to basically take you through everything I discovered over the last 48 hours. So I don't, in the interest of full disclosure, I don't imagine that being necessarily captivating, but it's the best I've got, you know. We're now, what, 2.5 to 3 months into lockdown. What do you expect from me? Exactly. So we're going to talk about one of the most notorious murder investigations in Australia in a bit, because I find it absolutely captivating. But let's begin with my attraction, seemingly, to a dude. Really weird, right? I hope to be bringing you an interview in a week or 2 weeks' time with a UK documentary and presenter, documentary maker and presenter called Ellie Flynn. I've referenced her in a previous episode, and I just really like her stuff. So I just sent an email to her and her agent saying I'd love to have a chat if you're up for it. And Remarkably, they were like, yeah, let's do that then. If you're interested in which episode, when I first shared my admiration for Ellie with you, go back to episode 14, which I called Why BBC, Netflix and Sky Might Think Twice About a Documentary by C.K. Golding. Episode 14, released on April the 26th. Go back and listen to that episode and you will understand why I've got all the respect for Ellie Flynn. So, yeah, I sent her agent and her an email saying I'd love to chat about Ellie because I've been watching a lot of documentaries. I've got so many questions. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that then. So while I was on the agent's website, I stumbled across something that instantly got my attention. It was a redhead. And my love of redheads is universally documented. Half of the time, facially, I'm not even like, I don't even notice the face. I just see those glorious locks and I'm like, you're going to be fit. I don't even know what your face looks like. Okay, I'm looking at your face. Yeah, you're fit. That's just how I feel about redheads. So I came across this presenter on the agency website called Rhiannon Styles, and that's what happened. I was like, fit. And I was like, yep. Yeah. So I'm researching who this Rhiannon Styles is, and I think it was about 17 or so seconds into my research that I realized that once upon a time Rhiannon Styles is actually Ryan Styles. And so many, you know, I'm a thinker and you know, I think about stuff. So even so, I was like, the minute I realized that this was a, is it a transgender human, right? The minute I realized, I was like, oh, hang on a minute. Do I fancy dudes? I don't even know. It was like, I'm quite proud of myself actually, because I think within about a second of thinking that, I was like, no, you just fancy redheads. Regardless of what they were born as and what they are now transitioning into, you just like redheads. And I was happy with that explanation, actually. Now, I want you to look at this picture, because this is a, because you know how sometimes, like, some pictures make us look different. This picture that I first saw of Rhiannon Styles, I stand by thinking this human is hot. I just stand by it, because A, it's a great photo, and B, she's a redhead, right? I'm just going to go in. I don't know what pronoun you believe in using, like, but I'm just going to use she, all right? Yes, she was born Ryan, he, but in respect for her, she wants to be called she. Let's just go for she. So I saw this picture, go onto the website. If you type into Google, in fact, you can just go onto our own website, actually. If you just type into Google, Rhiannon Styles, spell R-H-Y-A-N-N-O-N, surname Stiles, go onto her own website and scroll down. There's like a photograph where she's got flowers in her hair. She's wearing a yellow top with a yellow background. I mean, bearing in mind, humans, that I'm a photographer, right? Or at least I used to do a lot of it anyway, not so much now. But it's just a great photo to begin with. And then, apart from the fact it's a great photo, she's got red hair. And I was like, yeah, I'm all over that. I'm just going onto a website now, so I'm trying to find out where it is on that website. Journalist, performer and public speaker, Rhiannon Styles. It's just a great photo. And I was like, yeah, hot. And then I realised that she was Ryan. Then I just did some, I just found that interesting. I did some more research online, found out some YouTube video. I mean, even if you look at that book, her book's called The New Girl, green top, cute photo. But I'm now sat here thinking, but should you still think she's cute when you know that she was born a dude? And I'm like, I'm all right with that. Then the next question is, would you indulge? And I wouldn't indulge, but it doesn't matter. because I wasn't in possession of the facts when I first saw this remarkable photograph. I was blissfully unaware of the biology with which Rhiannon was born. But, yeah, I found it absolutely fascinating. Then I descended into this. I descended into this vortex of just like thinking more about the business of transgender. And I find it absolutely fascinating. I genuinely find people that transition from one sex to the next, whether it's male to female, female to male, I just find that story just absolutely captivating. I don't even know why, I just do. And it, my interest reached its apex about maybe, was it 6 years ago? Do you remember? It depends where you live in the UK as to whether you'll remember this, actually. But do you remember, are you familiar with Stephanie Hurst, who was formerly known as Simon Hurst, who presented the Galaxy 105 breakfast show for about 14 years? I used to be massively into radio, and I was like a commercial radio presenter for 3 years. I think it was between, when is it, 2008 to 2011, I think I was a commercial radio DJ, and I was just obsessed with radio for so long, and it was like the hard, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do was get like a proper radio job. It was only part-time, but it was still on a proper station, all that business. And it was like, I was obsessed with radio, and like, he was a huge hero to me because he had technically the biggest radio job in the north of England, and he presented the Galaxy Breakfast Show. And if you don't remember, then here's what it sounded like if you do not remember.
Percy,
Danny,
and JoJo
in the building.
The Capital Breakfast Show.
Now you remember Hursty, Danny, and JoJo, and I don't know if you've been living in a box all your life, but Hursty, born Simon Hurst, born a dude, is now Stephanie, and it was a huge media story, absolutely huge, in 2014, when he, you know, revealed that he's just lived his entire life in a male body, but he has known since the age of about six that he was born, and I quote, into the wrong body. And I'll never forget an interview that he did with BBC Radio 5 Live presenter Stephen Nolan. I remember exactly where I was when I was listening to this interview. I think it was 2014, apparently. And I lived in Hillsborough. This is very location specific. And I like to be location specific in case there's anyone in Sheffield listening to this. But there's obviously, believe it or not, people listening to this podcast in all different corners of the world, which is a delight. But fuck off. You'll not know anything I'm going to talk about for the next 5 minutes, to be honest. So I remember living on Fielding Road in Hillsborough, and I was on my bed for some reason, and I just heard this interview. It was really powerful, and I was interested in it because I'd spent so many years being fascinated and like respecting and looking up to Simon Hurst, and this was just a huge, huge deal. And it's like, oh, I had met him, by the way, and I've met him since, but I'm going to go into that in a bit. But yeah, it was a huge deal for me, so I was just fascinated by this story. And to this day, that interview with Stephen Nolan remains one of my favourite interviews of all time. Something about it was just so powerful. And I don't know if you have the vaguest interest in this kind of stuff, then you might be interested in this interview because it's still online now. And I just want to play a couple of clips from you. And I think one of the reasons that I love this is because, as a storyteller myself, Simon Hurst, or as he is now and as he was at the time of this interview, Stephanie, his ability to paint pictures is just remarkable. And in this clip I'm going to play you now, he's talking about how at the age of, I think he was eight, how at the age of eight he remembers. In fact, let me just play the clip for you and you can just get it down yourself.
Felt like a square peg in a round hole, but I didn't know why. And I couldn't really work that out. There was a girl who lived around the corner from me, and she had a pair of roller skates, and they were yellow. They weren't pink or anything like that. They were yellow with blue stripes on. And I remember distinctly, it's imprinted on my brain, I remember being sat on the curb where the pavement is in the road and putting them on, and then having a go on them. And it feeling, this felt normal, this felt right. Because I had no brothers or sisters or anything like that. So the only female in the house was my mum. And it felt really normal. And then I remember,
how old?
Eight or nine. I must be eight or nine. Around that time, It's around that time. Most definitely is. 8 or 9.
Now, any time I think back to this interview, bearing in mind I listened to this interview, it would have been like 6 years ago now. Any time I think back to this interview, I always remember that particular bit about the roller skates. Don't ask me why. I think my mind just gravitates towards detail. And I like the colour yellow. I've never been a roller skater, but the fact he just zeroed in on that detail always really resonated with me. I always remember that clip. That's why I played it to you now, because it's one of my favourite bits. But one of the reasons I like it is it's just relatable. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't plan to transition anytime soon. I think I was born in the right body. But, and I've never looked at a girl with roller skates and think, I really want them in pink. But what I do relate to is just sitting on a curb at some point as a human, as a kid, we remember sitting on a curb for some reason. And I don't know why, that just really resonated with me. And I remember listening to it and I thought, God, I thought I had a hard life. Imagine that. But my memories of being a kid are vast and varied. One that stands out is when, for some reason, some random dude drove over to my brother. I think he had a really fancy car. Me and my bro, I'd have been probably 10. My brother would have been like 4 years old. And this guy drove up. In my mind, he was drove up in a Ferrari, but the chances are it was just probably a very posh car. And he said, do you two want to come for a drive? And I've just never forgotten that, because for some reason, much as we wanted probably to sit in a fancy car, what we didn't want was to feel the impact of our mum's slipper across our face if we ever got home again, which in itself is questionable if we'd have got into that guy's car. But my point is, we just have attachments to certain memories of childhood. And I just the thought of looking at roller skates on a girl and thinking, I want to be in those roller skates. I don't know, something about that. This is really, really kind of got my imagination going. And I want to share this final clip with you from the interview. This is when he's talking about at the height of his radio career, sometimes wanting to kill himself. I don't know, I'll just play this for you now.
Because I started, as we call it, playing out on the street. Yeah, it's around that age. It's definitely.
Oh, that's the clip I just played to you. Excuse me. This is the scene. This is the clip I meant to play.
And during all of this time when, you're not completely being yourself, you're being with girls and you're thinking of something else, you're being with your parents and you're being someone other than who you want to be, how does the pressure manifest itself in you, in your head? Imagine someone poking you in the arm constantly, just tapping you like that. And it's like that every single day. From the minute I woke up to the minute I went to sleep, it was always there. The thought was there in my head constantly. I'd drive home in the car, I'd be driving on the M1, and I could have just turned the wheel into the central reservation. I didn't, of course. Or I'd scream going, ah, make it stop. Or I remember sitting in my kitchen, rocking backwards and forwards, going, just make this stop. Make it stop, go away, leave me alone. And I felt like she was eating me up inside. And
so you would scream out loud?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
They're not shocking words, but if anybody listening to this thinks about this, to actually scream out loud on your own.
Yeah.
It's a pretty profound, deep thing to do, actually.
So, there's every chance I'm going to forget to do this. So let me just tell you, if you want to listen to this interview, if any of this has been of particular interest to you, all you need to type into Google is Stephen Nolan, that's with a PH, STEPHEN, Stephen Nolan interviews Simon Hurst, 5 Live News, and you might have to put pod Tail at the end of that for it, because I don't think this interview is still on BBC, but it is on a platform called Podtail, PodTail. The interview in of itself, I think it's 45 minutes. Epic listen. I absolutely love it. Yeah, just put that into Google. Fill your boots. Now let me tell you why this interview felt, why it really resonated with me. I've mentioned already, I love the detail, and I've listened to Simon Hurst for so long. He was something of a hero to me, but I've met him twice. One, pre-transition, and secondly, post-transition, very recently. And I want to share stories of both because they're quite interesting, retrospectively as well. During my hustle, trying to get on the radio, used to enter a lot of radio competitions, and one of the radio competitions, I wouldn't even like to guess when this was, but just to hazard a guess, I'd probably say this would have been around 2005-ish. I'm just going to say 2006, just to be safe, right? Galaxy 105 had a competition, And if you won the competition, you'd go and hang out with Danny, who was Hursty's co-presenter, Jojo, who was Hursty's co-presenter, and Hursty himself, known now as Stephanie. I hope you're on with this. So the prize was to meet all three of them, who were presenting one of the biggest shows in the north of the UK on Galaxy 105. You'd go and hang out with them during the breakfast show, see how it all works. And like, that was a dream to me. So I entered the competition. Remarkably, I won. So I got to go to Leeds, hang out on Galaxy 105 with the breakfast show presenters. And it was just an eye opener. I remember I took up like a demo tape as well. I took up a demo tape. It's not every day you get to meet the biggest breakfast presenter in your close, in your area. So I took a demo tape. So I wanted to get on radio. I was desperate to get on radio. Took up a demo tape. We hung out after the show, had a coffee, gave him my tape. He said, oh, I'll have a listen to this. Unfortunately, I never heard from him again, which annoyed me a little bit. But, you know, I was like, ah, you bastard. But fine. But that aside, during that, he was like, so it was, everyone knew, everyone that said, and everyone always said that Hersey was one of the nicest humans. It kind of came across on air, and the time I spent with him in the studio, he was super nice as well. He was always asking me like, what is about radio that you want to do? Why are you interested in it? And he was like, just nice to hang out with. So the fact he didn't listen to my tape or get back to me, I was kind of, oh, well, you win some, you lose some. So that was in 2006. Fast forward to 2019, last year. Hursty is now Stephanie, okay? He's going through his transition because, as we've just listened to in the radio, he's known he's a woman for, well, he's known he wants, he feels he's in the wrong body for so many years. So Stephanie is now presenting on BBC Leeds. And one of my, this story is so bizarre. One of my clients last year, I was helping her put together a documentary about women in their 40s getting sent unsolicited explicit images online. And one of my clients was getting that. So I was handling all her PR and media placements and interviews. We were putting a documentary together, and BBC Radio Leeds invited us in. By complete fluke, the show is now presented by Stephanie, formerly known as Hursty, right? So Stephanie's presenting this new show. I go in. I say to her now, I met you like 10 years ago when you were on The Breakfast Show. And I don't think she remembered me. I'm thinking back. I can't remember if she remembered. I don't think she did remember me from her days as Hursty. But we got on, all three of us, me, my client and Stephanie, we had a blast. We were chatting for ages after the recording. And here's what I wanted to mention to you. I remember, right, looking at her, Stephanie, thinking, like, you're a very impressive woman. Like, just like, if you didn't know who she was and you walked in to that building, like, I mean, it comes down to type, I suppose, what you like. But I was like, yeah, very attractive. It's just very odd. But I think one of the reasons I was impressed was, like, I don't know if I've mentioned this in the past, but I'm weird. Like, I'm really into clothes. So she was wearing this jumpsuit. She's wearing this woman's jumpsuit, but like, just remarkably well turned out. And I love a jumpsuit. I love a pair of dunks. I love, like, women in jumpsuits just look cool. I always have. And she just wore this like really cool jumpsuit. Great. And I was like, interesting. But then what, and I remember at the time I was wearing this polo shirt, and I think it was summer, so I was probably hitting the gym more than usual. So I was mildly impressive. I just remember her saying, you're a big lad, aren't you? I'm not saying she was licking her lips or anything, but it was just, I don't know, it was just an unusual scenario. I can stand here, put my hand up and say, I've never had in all my life a transgender person looking at me with glee. Now, again, I'm not sitting here saying like she was into me or anything like that, but it was like, I don't even know if I'm making sense here. It was just odd. And until you find yourself in that position, you'll probably just find this a very curious thread. But that's how I found it as well. It wasn't in the least bit uncomfortable, by the way. So I don't want you to come away from this thinking I felt uneasy, because I didn't. I didn't feel on edge. I didn't feel like I was about to be like violated. None of that. It was just novel, if anything else. It was just novel. But I've just, because I found the story so interesting, I remember like 5 years before this meeting, I'd been listening to that interview that I displayed for you. And that that interview moved me so much. I just enjoyed being in her presence because, like, I felt like I knew so much about the journey that she'd been on. So it was just nice to hang out with her and my client. And we just, like I said, we were speaking for about 40 minutes and I just found her story absolutely fascinating. So this has been a very long route around me explaining to you. It all started with me finding like a redheaded dude attractive. So I do know that I'm not into transgender humans, but I just find it really fascinating how, I suppose I'm just interested in the science and the biology and how, I'm actually ashamed of the fact I was just going to use the word convincing, how convinced that I've even said it now. And I didn't even need to just say it, but I've just said it. Like, I don't think convincing is the right word I should be using, but I am just, you cannot avoid being in awe of what can be accomplished in this day and age. You can't help but be in awe of it. And yeah, yes. I mean, you know, type Stephanie Hurst into Google if you want. She's been on the Lorraine Show on ITV many, many times. So there's a few interviews on there knocking about on YouTube as well. So yeah, it's just, I just find it deeply fascinating. And as I said, if you're into any of those interviews, find them online because I'm all about them. Right, okay, let's move on to Friends for a minute because I watched this yesterday. I think it was while I was going into this rabbit hole of YouTube and stuff. I don't really know what made me type this into... But anyway, came across this video on YouTube called Friends, the one that goes behind the scenes. And this is absolutely fascinating, right? It's a 40-minute video that's taken you behind the scenes of the recording of episode one of a brand new season. And I can't remember what season it was. It was just after Rachel and Ross drunkenly got married in Vegas. And that's how the series ends. One of the season ends on that cliffhanger. Then it's the next series and it's taken as behind the scenes of that particular recording. And it's absolutely fascinating. If like you're a writer or a filmmaker, you'll just be fascinated about going into the writer's room. You probably think that each episode of Friends might be written by two or three people, but it's ridiculous. The machine behind the global behemoth of Friends is just obscene. I've been aware of something called a writer's room forever. Like most big sitcoms have what's known as a writer's room, and usually like 10 minimum, but often 12, 13, 14 people in that room. And it's their job to assemble one episode. They're all throwing gags into it, ideas, trying to make it the funniest thing that I can possibly make it. There's usually one showrunner, which is the executive producer that like basically is responsible for the show. And they have the final say. Depending on how far into this kind of stuff you go, some showrunners have been known to be notoriously bastards, but some of them are more collaborative. Anyway, so it takes you behind the writer's room of Friends, and it's just brilliant. And the way Friends is filmed, they are so obsessed. And that's not an understatement, or an overstatement, sorry. That isn't an overstatement. Like, the whole team, writers, are obsessed with making every show as funny as it can possibly be, to the point whereby they're filming and recording it. And bearing in mind, Friends is filmed in front of a live studio audience, so to record one episode usually takes, I can't remember how many hours they said. Was it 5 hours? I think one episode usually takes 5 hours minimum to film. I think it was 5 hours. It might be more. It might be 15. I can't even remember. But yeah, so during recording, if one of the jokes on the script doesn't work when spoken out loud, then all the writers just huddle together and say, that joke doesn't work. We need to make it better. And everyone's just waiting for them to make the joke better. They'll go and give the cast an alternative and then they'll go with it. So I'm just going to play with you one clip, which is exactly that. It's Chandler delivering a line, which, in the opinion of the head writer, isn't as funny as he thought it was when it was written. So they all huddle and trying to find a better gag. And then sometimes they'll just ask the cast themselves if they've got any ideas. And that's what happens in here. And Matthew Perry, who plays Chandler, comes up with an alternative on the spot, which is funnier. So that's what this clip is. And again, if you're a fan of Friends, you will love this. Because I love Friends. I'm not like fanatical, but I love it. So this was just fascinating for me. If you are fanatical, you need this. Here you go.
Each scene is shot a number of times, with a surprising amount of rewriting going on between takes.
I can't believe
think Ross and Rachel got married?
I can't either.
I can't believe Ross and Rachel got married.
I know. I didn't even know they were dating again.
I don't think there's much dating as they are drunk.
I don't think they're dating as much dating as they are unbelievably drunk or very.
So Matthew Perry just delivered that line. I don't think they're dating as much as they are drunk. And then what you're hearing now is the producers and writers huddled because they realise that that joke isn't funny about I don't think they're dating as much as they are drunk. So they're trying to find a better alternative to I don't think they are dating as much as they are drunk. So the voices you hear now are the executive producers and the writers looking for a funnier alternative.
Very drunk. Something fun and emphatic there.
I don't think they're as much dating as they are completely filled with alcohol.
The first take of the wedding chapel scene fell a little flat on David Crane's ears. While the cameras reset, they quickly try and come up with something funnier. Finally, they go to Matthew Perry.
You know what? Why don't we ask him and that because it's so, like, Matthew.
Okay. I don't think they're as much dating as they are acting on a scene from Barfly.
All right.
Did they have as much dating as they are completely filled with alcohol?
As much dating as there are two bottles of vodka walking around in human form.
Yes.
So Matthew Perry's just gone through two alternatives. And then on the very last one, he came up with a third alternative, which is, I don't think they're dating as much. They are two bottles of vodka walking around in human form. And you can hear one of the exec producers just laughing about that random idea that he just puts out of the sky. And that turns out to be the one that they go with. So hear them re-recording it now with that new line, graciously offered by Matthew Perry, a.k.a. Chandler.
7 minutes later, they're ready for take two.
I can't believe Ross and Rachel got married.
I know. I didn't even know they were dating again.
Well, I don't think they're as much dating as they are two bottles of vodka walking around in human form.
The changing as we go is a really good testament to just how smart the executive producers are. And I've done a lot of shows in the past where had kind of a tyrannical...
That's Matthew Perry speaking, by the way, Chandler.
Don't touch the words, and it's just not the way to do a show. And if a joke doesn't work, you just see this whole group of smart people just get in this huddle, and then they come out and they tell you a joke.
The audience is going to tell you it's working.
And this, humans, is Marta Kaufman, the creator of Friends. So if you're ever interested in what the actual creator of Friends, who I suspect has a very, very healthy bank balance, if you want to know what she looks like, then you need to be watching this documentary.
It's not working. Things that crack us up, they just sometimes don't get. Sometimes they get the setup and you don't even need the joke.
I'm going to jump.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know how nerdy I'm getting here, but on a little things like that absolutely fascinate me. Like, what do the two people that created one of the biggest sitcoms on planet Earth look like? Marta Kaufman, David Crane, they're in this documentary. As I said, they take you behind the scenes of the writer's room. They're both in it, sometimes dismissing ideas, sometimes loving ideas, sometimes throwing ideas in themselves. The show goes into granular detail of how an episode is made. There's two human beings whose job it is to create sound effects out of the most ridiculous props you could imagine, like something simple, like someone walking across the floor, that needs to be recreated in post-production so that it sounds really crisp. But sometimes the stuff that they're using to recreate sounds of someone walking across the floor, you'd be like, that is what that sound was. That's ridiculous. And then it'll take you into the editing room when the episode has been edited. There's like four camera angles for any one shot on Monica's face, for example, and it's one guy's job to decide which one of those camera angles is going to be in the final cut, and it's absolutely freaking fascinating. This was like, this documentary was 42 minutes long, and I could have watched another 42 minutes, seriously. And if you're interested, again, it's called Friends, the one that goes behind the scenes. Let me know what you think. I absolutely loved it. And I think one of the reasons I loved it, specifically the editing bit when he was going through the edit, because one of the episodes... Like, an episode of Friends needs to be 22 minutes exactly, right? Because you need to put adverts in there to make it a 30-minute slot for NBC, right? So it needs to be 22 minutes without ads. And one of the episodes that they'd made was like 25 minutes. So they had to find 3 minutes to cut just to make it work. And they were pulling their hair out because they'd already cut it to get it down to 25 minutes. And that just means they had to get rid of loads of funny bits. And that connected with me as a, you know, I'm nowhere near that level, but just as a creator and as a documentary maker, it really connected with me because if we look at something like, I don't know, let's look at I'm going to use this because it's very prevalent in my mind at the minute because I've just hit 10,000 views on YouTube. So as you know, my latest, well, one of my recent documentaries, Awakening with a Killer, what you guys don't know about that documentary is how agonizing it was for me to make it, because there's my sit-down chat with Matthew, who, according to his story, killed a guy when he was 11. Do you know how much I had to cut out? Not because it was necessarily salacious or going to offend anyone, but he went off on some ridiculous tangents. There's bits when he's talking about how his girlfriend's head was boiled, right? And I just took that out because it was, in my opinion, getting off topic. I just wanted it to be focused on his story about him as a kid and his story about when he says he killed a kid, right? I wanted to focus it on that. So he's going off on these remarkable tangents about his girlfriend's head being boiled by people. And I thought, interesting as that is, remarkable and bizarre as it is, it's off topic, so I just had to cut it. And, you know, that was a huge call for me. And if you think about the last 3 minutes of that documentary, when that guy says to me, is your name CK? Can I hug you? You know, that guy on the deck of the hostel who just completely out of the blue says, you CK, I watched your documentary yesterday. Can I hug you? There's a moment that I had with him when we were sat down on the deck. We were talking for about 15 minutes. And the reason that, you know, when he came over and said, I've watched your film online, 61 Hugs, and I just thought it was remarkable. The reason it really connected with him is because as a kid, well, he's gay now, right? But he was obviously gay as a kid, but he was not openly gay. He was not outward gay. People in the community didn't know he was gay. So he was just struggling with his confidence and his identity. And he was talking about how he had to kind of navigate that. And I recorded all of that. And I really wanted to share it in the documentary, but again, it would have made the documentary A, too long, and B, it would have taken it off on a tangent that wasn't necessarily, it wasn't germane to the documentary. So my point is this, I've just shared with you two scenes that didn't make the final cut of Waiting with a Killer. If anything I've just shared with you sounds even vaguely interesting, so the guy's story about being gay as a kid, or Matthew's story about his girlfriend's head been boiled. If any one of those two sound of the vaguest interest, if I get enough of you saying I'd really like to see that clip, I will 100% put it on my website. Similarly, if nobody gives a shit and nobody sends me a direct message saying I want to see that, then I won't. Good. Right, let's move on, because I feel myself getting to the end of this walk through the last 48 hours of my life. I'm going to end on this. I never, and I mean never, watch normal TV, like, you know, terrestrial TV, BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, and all that jazz. I can't even remember the last time I sat down and watched it. The only thing I watch on TV is usually Sky, and not Sky, 5 USA every weekend afternoon, because Columbo's on it, and I'm all about Columbo. I've always been all about Columbo, and I'll never not be all about Columbo. So I always like to get my weekly fix of Columbo on 5 US. That's the only thing I really watch on linear TV. Everything else is either online, YouTube, streamers, whatever. But for some reason today I had a TV guide in front of me, so I'll see what shit's normally on TV. And there was something on Channel 4 that captured my attention called Murder in the Outback, The Falconio and Lee's Mystery. I'm going to read you the first paragraph because I'm getting somewhere with this. This is the description of this, which is the pick of the day for today, Sunday the 7th of June. If you ever switched on the news sometime in 2001, the murder of British backpacker Peter Falconio and abduction of his girlfriend Joanna Lees in the Australian outback won't have passed you by. The story became a media juggernaut as Australian police sought the man that flagged down the couple, shot Peter and bound and gagged Joanne before she managed to escape. Now, I was reading this thinking, I had like the vaguest memory of that case, but it was like, do I remember this? Now, in the interest of full disclosure, once again, let me get a chewing gum, 1 minute. Dry mouth. Right, I do enjoy real life documentaries and crimes. I'm really into it. So I thought, oh, what's this? So I put it into YouTube and I was just bombarded by so much stuff. I've watched today 3 different documentaries about this. Because one thing I've noticed over the years is that sometimes you watch a documentary and it will just give you the version that it wants to give you, to hell with what actually happened. And sometimes the omissions in documentaries of stuff that I don't even talk about that's critical is remarkable. So I thought, what I'm going to do, this is a 4-part series on Channel 4. First episode today, second episode tomorrow, and every night until Wednesday when they air the fourth and final part. So 4 1-hour long docs. And I'm thinking I'm going to watch all of them, but first I want to get some backstory just to see what Channel 4 decide to leave out or what they decide to add in, whatever. I'm a nerd like that. So I've just been watching them. I've been watching about three different... It's absolutely fucking fascinating, right? There were 26 and 28, respectively, John and Peter. They were in Australia, backpacking. Well, they're actually traveling around the world for a couple of years, and they're in Australia, and during an absolute pitch black night, they were driving along a very desolate strip of tarmac. Don't know why I didn't just say road, to be honest. And yeah, they were flagged down by this guy who would subsequently turn out to be that Brad Lee Murdoch guy. But the thing is, before he was tracked down, everybody just had massive question marks over whether it was Joanna that did it. She's from Huddersfield, Yorkshire, and that's where they met. And there was just this huge media storm around it. Like, was it her? Because she wasn't very endearing to the press because she didn't want to talk to them. Even when she did, she was like, you're all scum. To which I found quite endearing, to be fair. But my point is, I'm just going to play you a little clip because this is what I'll be doing for the next four nights. I'll be watching this series. But this was my research. Here's a clip. In this clip, we have the head investigative human called Colleen Gwynn talking about why from the get-go she did believe in Joanne. It's pretty interesting. Have a listen.
Months later, when Colleen Gwynn took over the investigation, there was one thing she was in no doubt about, that Joanne was telling the truth.
I just didn't think that anyone could make this story up.
You can understand why she was not in a happy place when it came to the Northern Territory Police.
She was unhappy, yeah. She felt that we'd let her down. She didn't feel that we took her seriously.
In fact, I think you said she thought you were a bunch of dickheads.
Maybe that's the terminology I used at the time, but, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to be respectful of a victim. They may not like you. They may not like the way you go about things. But I had a job to do, but it was important that Joanne was respected as a victim, as someone had been through one of the most horrific ordeals you can imagine.
I'll tell you something, right? If you value my opinion in any way, shape or form, I would strongly recommend watching this particular documentary because you couldn't make up this story. And the way it ends and the remarkable... I'm not going to say plot twist because it's real life, but what happens in Joanne's life very recently, I think 3 years ago, you couldn't, it's just ridiculous. So it's called The Joanne Lees Story. Type into Google The Joanne Lees Story, 60 minutes video. Hang on a minute. The Joanne Lees Story, 60 minutes Daily Motion, because this video is really hard to find. If you don't put in Daily Motion 60 minutes, then you'll not find it. So, The Joanne Lees Story, Daily Motion, DailyMotion, 60 minutes, because 60 minutes is what the name of the show was that she was interviewed on. The documentary itself is 52 minutes, and it's just fascinating. Yeah, like the last 10 minutes when she just, I don't want to spoil it for you, but like the direction that Joanne's life took after the guy was found and imprisoned and all this business. It's just absolute fucking madness. But I was watching this thinking, oh, is she credible? Do I believe her? And I don't know what it is about us humans why we always want to cultivate plot twists, and we always want to look for the least savoury explanation. And I think Maddie McCann and her mum and dad are the best examples of this. I think, do you know what? I once heard someone say something that really makes a lot of sense to me. And I think I want to share it with you because it said, as humans, we don't see things how they are. We see things how we are. Let me explain what that means and just flesh it out a little bit. I was watching Joanne Lees during the press conference back in 2001 when I was watching this documentary and I was watching her press conference retrospectively. I was watching it thinking, you look... You're so, you know how some people are either warm, that you're warm to them, or some people are distraught, and because of that distress, you have sympathy for them. Because she didn't have any one of those two qualities, instantly it got my back up, because she's not naturally a warm human being, to be fair. Or certainly back then she wasn't. Now I think some of the edges have been rubbed off a little bit. But she wasn't endearing. As I say, she was unequivocally telling the press that she didn't have much time for them. And we're not used to that, right? So because of that, we're instantly thinking, you're something about you I don't like. You're guilty. And for me, that's because unless you're a total bell end, you are probably relatively warm, right? If I was in a press conference, I wouldn't be in any rush to be anyone's friend per se, but I probably wouldn't come across as a giant bell end, right? So I'm looking at her thinking, you're not behaving the way I would behave, and I don't like that. So this is coming back to what I was saying earlier on about we don't see things as they are, we see things how we are. So I'm looking at her quite dispassionate as she was, and I'm thinking, that's not how I would be, and I don't like that. I want you to be how I would be. And you remember, I've been talking a lot about this over the last few weeks of this podcast, and I'm desperate to question my reflexes more, because I think that's when you actually learn more about humanity and how we function. And I remember thinking, well, why should she be warm? Why her job isn't to make me feel comfortable. Maybe that's not who she is as a person. You know how some people are just not warm? Like, I'm naturally a hugger, but not everybody is. Not everybody is. I'm naturally a handshaker, but not everybody is. Sometimes I go to shake someone's hand and they look like I'm reaching to grab their cock. I'm really not. Not everybody's a handshaker. So what I'm saying is, we need to stop projecting. So I'm happy to watch people in press conferences now and see them behaving in a way that isn't congruent with how I would behave. And it's not my place to say that because of that incompatibility that you're guilty. That's just who they are. Stop looking at them through my own eyes. Just look at them. That's just who they are. All right. I don't know why. Jesus. Proper rant. But I'll tell you, I've just remembered another reason why this is like super... The reason I'm willing to look at Joanne Lee's acting as she was and give her a pass, there's a very specific reason, and I'm going to share it with you now, then I'm going to leave, because I've given you too much of my week of bullshit content consumption, to be brutally honest with you. Right. If you want to take a punt on this, I'm willing to say that this might be one of the most engaging things you'll watch this week. I want you to go onto iPlayer and I want you to type car crash, who's lying? And I discovered this randomly, very randomly as well. And it's basically 51 minutes and it's using real footage from something that happened a few years ago when three kids were in a car. It was four mates in a car, and an accident happened. The car flipped on the road, ended up on the side of the road in a very isolated stretch of tarmac. That's the word I was looking for earlier. Oh no, it was road. Yeah, and there's a shitload of footage because when the cops arrive, they're all wearing body cams, and there's this kid sitting on the car waiting for the police to come. And the whole 50-minute documentary is unraveling what happened when they had to figure out who was driving, who was lying, why one of the kids died, and who's responsible for that kid dying, i.e. which of you is going to go to prison for murder, right? So the whole 50-minute documentary, using all the body cam footage and all the interview footage, because there was shitloads of interviews and there was shitloads of footage of those interviews of the boys, obviously. And I remember the very first time I heard a huge tell of someone being disingenuous or someone lying is when you're like scratching your nose and you're kind of fidgeting and you're saying and ahs and you're scratching your eyeballs and you're fiddling with your ears. The first time I heard that that's a huge tell was probably like 25 years ago when I was about 15 or something like that. And it's always stuck with me, and like I always apply it all the time. But this was probably the first time that I've seen something that completely shits on that theory. Because one of the kids, if you watch his interview, right, he's masturbating with his nose, right? Now that's a very grim, I've just painted a very, very grim image in your head. But what I'm saying is, he's dicking about with his nose, he's scratching his ears, he's scratching his eyes, he's covering his mouth as he's talking. And there's this footage of him doing all these things. And it turns out he was telling the absolute truth. Everything he's saying in that interview is absolutely true, and there's like forensic evidence to prove everything he's saying is true. But if you watch him, he looks like a lying little scumbag. Because of that revelation I had 25 years ago that apparently if you're a liar, you do these things. But when I was watching this documentary yesterday, again, for clarity, car crash, who's lying, on iPlayer, get it in your neck, get it in your eyeballs, it's brilliant. Honestly, that is what made me realise that just because Joanne Lees was a little bit cold in the interview, she was a little bit dispassionate, that doesn't really mean anything, to be fair. And it was a huge, huge realisation. And yeah, I'm kind of glad that I've discovered that eye scratching and all that isn't... It is a tell sometimes, but it's not foolproof, is it? And yeah, honestly, watching that documentary, just watching that kid scratching away, rubbing away, and it turns out I was telling the truth, I was like, fuck, I've really enjoyed using that bit of amateur psychology for the last 25 years. I'm now going to have to use something else, and I don't fucking like... I've always enjoyed using it. And to be fair, sometimes I've probably used it and just cut off friendships because they're dicking about their ears. Like, you did take my quiche, you lying bastard. You took my quiche. How do you know I took your quiche? Because you're dicking about with your nose. Now I'm thinking I should probably not have cut that person out of my life because they might have been telling the truth. That said, if I'm willing to, you know, if I'm willing to cut off a friendship just because I think someone's taking my quiche, then they probably weren't that. Probably weren't. They didn't really have that much merit in my life, to be fair, but I just love quiche. Listen, I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. I'm going to go. Let me know if anything I've shared with you today you watch, and stop masturbating with your nose. Let's chat next week.